Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Doing. I didn't think I'd come to LA to get better air quality, though. I can tell you that much.
you didn't expect that coming from Portland.
Finally, the tables have turned. Malcolm was texting me complaining about it yesterday. He was like, crazy. Bro, I can't go shoot around.
Crazy.
It's foul.
I gotta say right off top, we haven't met before, but your pictures, and even when I see you now on the video, you look like you're 7 feet tall. Like, you got something about you. Like, you, I'm like, I know he's not that tall, but he looks like way taller than me. You just present big as hell. Jesus.
Man, personality fills the room up, man. That's so funny. That's hilarious. Terry, this movie is different.
It was like the first basketball back in the day, like the first basketball movie I saw. Like, I'm like, whoa, what is going on? Because they all, you know, it's got a lot of characters in it, right? It's got a lot going on, man. I was like, they're playing basketball. What are they doing out there? Intros was amazing.
Okay, because that was my question. I was like, what did it speak to you just because it was like the first black, like, sports thing? I figure, like, in that time period, there aren't many black sports movies, right?
No, it was not many anything of sports of that magnitude, right? Like basketball or that many characters of people with blackness. And you know, Pittsburgh back then was like, okay, I'm like Chocolate City, okay, all right. So, entertaining, kind of weird, you know, the concepts of Pisces and, you know. And
okay, so are you? What's your sign then? Are you secretly mad?
I'm like, I'm not a Pisces. I'm like, that mean I can't play ball, or what does that mean?
Who did that throw me off? What's going on?
I gotta be a Pisces to play ball. But unfortunately, I did not. That's okay.
That's hilarious. Dude, so you were like 16 when this dropped. So did you think that this was going to be like what professional basketball was going to be like? You were like, this is it. Like, yeah, I'm like, making the league.
They got concerts there. They got people dancing. They got the intros. They got everybody, you know, acting crazy. They got the locker room scenes. I'm like, whoa, okay, all right, okay, okay.
You expected to come in on a hot air balloon?
Exactly.
It was like, oh, I made it. This is ridiculous, man. It's mad funny. Thank you for coming to do this. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem.
We don't do intros, but I mean,
we don't do intros, so we won't do intros. We're not gonna change today.
Can't switch it up.
They know what's up. They'll see the picture.
Yeah, they're gonna see the picture.
I have to write a description on the thing. They can read that. You don't have time for intros.
Names only.
Keep it low. Yeah. All right.
I was doing a little bit of literally just looking at the Wikipedia page to see if there's some stuff that I might have missed about you. And the first thing that came up is you played for Dick Bennett.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dick Bennett was the coach of Washington State when I was in school.
Oh, wow.
And it was miserable playing against them. I mean, we won most of the time, but the score would be like 38-39. It was just like, the worst things that people hate about college basketball, like holding the ball for 34 seconds. And then they held Arizona to like 50, though, who was averaging 100. Well, but for us, it was like
playing an AI level where you had no shot clock and no 3-point line. We had possessions where we had to pass it 20 times before we could take a shot.
No, thank you.
If you averaged 20 points doing that. I don't understand. You were the only person allowed to shoot. I don't understand. That's impossible.
That was a finesse. Terry was paying that, man. Terry's throwing some.
Basically, you told all your teammates, you don't shoot on the 21st pass. It's coming to me.
I'm not the 20th guy. Make it a 21st pass.
My system. That's actually hilarious.
Bro. Yeah, it challenged our opponents. That's for sure. They were like, man, many times guys say, man, you got ever going to shoot the ball? What are you doing? I'd be like,
yeah,
what kind of offense is this, man? what are you guys running exactly? I was like, this is a passing offense. We got so that you part. You guys are doing a lot of passing. When are you going to shoot?
So you are the exact opposite of the Clippers, like, who are just one-on-one basketball.
Well, also they won.
It's a also big difference true. Between them. Also true. Also true.
I don't think Terry Shrunk in the biggest games. That's just me. That's just me. I don't know.
Shot fired.
Playoff. Playoff feet, huh? Okay. Shot fired.
I don't have to. My shots are as accurate as Paul George. I can fire them off all day. Doesn't mean they're going to hit. Too soon?
That's a little raw. That's a little raw.
Bruh. Best player in the league. Okay. 2 points in the fourth quarter. Okay, guy.
Yeah.
That's just hilarious. Do you have another bat? I have to ask you this. When you were courting Susie, did you, for 5 minutes, just dunk the basketball while she sat on the sideline and watched like Julius Erving did in his movie where he was talking to Buddy Smith? I was like, what's Susie?
Clue me in on
his
this.
His wife, Mama P, Rihanna's mother, is Susie Porter. And they met in college. And in this movie, The Fish to Save Pittsburgh, Dr. J is talking to the like little kid, James Bond the third.
The third in a line of black James Bonds in the 70s. I don't understand at all. I have no idea how that's possible.
It's actually ridiculous. I swore this man was a dwarf for the first 30 minutes of the movie because
a little
just,
person. He means little person.
I apologize. A little person. I forgot the PC term. Because he's just talking to people like Gary Coleman was, though. Just like he was an adult, but he was like mad small. Anyway, whatever. His sister is like, I hate basketball. You 7-foot freak running around in your underwear. My brother can't do that. And then he goes, nah, ain't nothing wrong with 2-on-2. And then for 5 minutes, he proceeds to just dunk the basketball. It's like a montage of him just dunking. And then after that, they're together.
They knew their selling point. Like,
that was, how
that was not how I got down. That was not how. That was not my.
That wasn't
it. I could not dunk. So that was a problem for me. If I would have had to try to impress her with my dunking skills.
This is game over.
Just game over. Just not
just smooth reverse layups. Just up and unders.
Slap the backboard. Slap that backboard. Keep it simple.
A lot of form. Just nice follow through.
Exactly.
I was looking. You're from Wisconsin. We're just going to jump right into a lot's happened in Wisconsin in the last couple months.
Yeah,
and I know you're involved in the community there. Do you have any hot takes about that or how you are reacting or anything that you're doing in the community out there in Wisconsin?
I think Wisconsin has been like a lot of, I wouldn't say major cities, but cities that have been impacted by social injustice and law enforcement's crimes. And so it's a community that's trying to react to what's been going on and trying to bring national awareness. So, you know, in regards to what... you know, we're trying to, protect our community and also, give it a chance to really put it in light. And so it's been difficult, as you can imagine, for a lot of, black communities across the country in regards to what's been going on. And so it's just been a constant struggle and trying to get people in position that can help make the right decisions and get this thing to a position where we feel comfortable walking down the street. We feel comfortable not being harassed. And so it's a lifelong journey.
Well, part of the reason I asked that is because, you have, at least what I saw online, of like foundation that helps kids go to college in that area. You've done work with the Boys and Girls Club. I had a talk, Chris and I were out somewhere recently, and this woman, she has a black brother who's not a brother. I didn't really understand what she was trying to say. Who's a Marine, who fed her this stuff that she brought back to us, like, why would they protest when they don't do anything for their community? And I'm like, you're sorely mistaken. People have been putting in work in their communities for a long time, but the messaging doesn't get out. Like, I didn't know about the work you did in the community until I looked it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These things aren't broadcast. A lot of people do it just to do their best to help, but no one talks about it. So I'm sure you've heard these messages before. What have they actually done? What does that mean to you? What do you say back to them?
Well, I tell them to go get educated. And like you said, everything is not, you know, people don't always do things to bring notoriety or get publicized. They do things because of the way probably I did it. I grew up in the Boys and Girls Club, and I swore that if I ever got in a position where I could help them, I would always, you know, step forward, go visit the clubs, talk to the kids, share my vision, share my story with them. But they can know somebody made it, someone who has gone through the same struggles they've gone through. And then when I went to college, I went to Milwaukee Public School, and my wife set up a fund at our college, a scholarship that anybody wanted to go from Milwaukee Public School to Stevens Point or any other state schools, we would get there, you know, give them a good portion of their scholarship taken care of. So those are things that I think if you looked deep into people who've gone on and have success, obviously professional athletes have done a lot of great things, but I think even business people, local business people have gone and reached back into the community to try to bring everybody up. And I think it's all about the culture. It takes a village, so to speak. You know, the old cliche, but
yep.
I think people are truly looking to enlighten not just their experience, because they've been blessed, but along the way, I had so many people in that community, in the neighborhood, that watched out for me. So it's just about paying respect to them and trying to do right for the next generation and provide an opportunity. I mean, I didn't get an opportunity like that. There wasn't as many, but when I got to a position where I could help, there was no question I was going to do what I can do to try to give those guys opportunities to see another side of the world and have another experience growing up.
Yeah. Oh, like, kind of expand on that. You're like the mayor of Portland, right? So you're rubbing shoulders with a lot of wealthy white folks. And I was having this conversation with my friend the other day of she was at a dinner with her parents, and like her parents' friends were saying, oh, I tried to do – be a part of the thing, but they didn't want me. Like, what's a less militant? Like, what is a way if you're on a golf course talking to somebody? It's like, look, man, this is just what it is, and this is what you can do. You're not. It doesn't affect you directly, but you still. If you say you're my friend, right? Like you say that we're supposed to be moving towards progress. Like, this is something you can do. Like, as someone who this doesn't affect at all. Like, do you have a I'm trying to be less aggressive about talking to white people about this.
Yeah, you're just talking about you, man. This is the softest he's ever spoken in his whole goddamn life. Every time we're on here, I get mad at him because he says F-bombs and N-bombs every third word. With you, he's like, sir, how do you feel about this?
I did not go coonish, okay?
Damn near, man.
I was trying to be respectful.
Come on, man.
I was trying to be respectful. You just chewed me out because you said I cussed too much in the last episode.
He's the only person ever respected. He's the only person.
Everybody else in our age demo, I'll give fuck.
I think that, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's a challenge, but I think what we have to try to do when you're in a position of meeting business leaders in the community, who I think, like anything, you have to educate them, right? They've never, and I've shared this with guys, they've never had to have the conversation with their sons about how to conduct themselves if they got pulled over. They never had to have the odd feeling that their son left the door that he may get shot on something that, you know, just no way you should think that someone's gonna die by a random or just a routine police stop. And so you have to try to teach them, which is hard. I mean, they have to be open about it, and then you have to try to tell them the way law enforcement officers or just precincts in general and how they police other communities is not the same way they police black communities of color. And they have no experience at it. So you got to try to educate them a little bit and let them know that, yeah, you had a white privilege. It is what it is. And, You, for the most part, they're receptive to it. They're always willing to help. What organizations can we follow up? What organizations can we provide support? And I think that's the biggest thing. And I think Portland's a prime example because Portland, I love Portland, but the city may be 30% black or 30% of people of color. But when you watch all the protesters, it's probably about 80% people of non-color that's out there pushing and saying this is not right. And so you have a momentum from not just the people or the communities of color, but the people that are outside that community. Now it's talking about, okay, how we can take this momentum and how we can really use it towards getting laws on the books, towards getting police officers training, change. And that's the next step, right? That's the next step. If we really want to have something for the next generations of kids of color, it's the ability for us to sit at a table and get stuff that's going to impact their lives and not have the same thing repeat itself. I mean, history doesn't, you go to any history book, man, not any history book, because some history books ain't. I was going if you go to the right history books, it's happened every generation, every century has happened.
Yep.
And it's been the same thing. It's been the same thing. So you keep asking yourself, why haven't we been able to get a change? Why haven't we been able to make it reach mainstream to the levels for they can be concerned about it and say, okay, this is really going on. It's been going on. Now, how are we going to change it? And I think we're at a point now where if it's not going to change after this experience and this moment, it's just not going to have a change, because this is the most, I think, on a national scale, that it is in the conversation every day, and the media outlets are more severe than they ever were.
Yeah. So you coach at the University of Portland, mm-hmm. and so you're around youngsters every day, 17 to 22, mm-hmm. about. When I was in college, I went to Cal. I was a political science major. I would say most of my teammates were like, oh, Rod's on that politics shit. Like, he's over here. That's his lane. And then when I got, you know, when I was in the D League and trying to get, you know, called up and all that, you know, the stuff that I was doing was really frowned upon. And I really found myself in a box a lot, which was, you know, we'd have these team awareness meetings in the D League especially. And I'd be the only one who had something going outside of basketball. I'm not saying this to brag. I'm saying this to ask a question, which is, lately in the last couple of years, guys like Mo Bamba, where I see their pre-draft stuff, they seem way more dialed in, way more able to be themselves and have their personality and whatever that comes with. And I'm wondering, as a coach, when you meet these kids, do you feel like the kids of color, black kids, are starting to embrace activism more, political speech more? Do you feel like it's all the same and we got to keep, you know, pushing at it? Or do you feel like it's are you seeing positive steps?
I think the internet and the advancement of technology has helped that dramatically. I think kids are much more wired into what's going on. I don't know if they're to the level of the 60s, where on campuses it was always rally, rally, you know. I don't know if it's to that level, but kids are more aware. And I think my approach, when I've talked to them on different topics, is about, hey, you're in a position right now where you have an opportunity for a voice. It's on this campus, small campus, but still it is a voice. And wherever you're at, it's about you trying to make a change or trying to educate. And sometimes you can't be on a national level to make those changes. Just being where you were at and trying to make changes and just trying to understand how you can make changes and how you can make people aware. Again, understanding everybody's culture is the best way to try to figure out how to understand somebody and what their mindset and how they're wired and why they're wired that way. And sometimes that's the most difficult part.
Facts. Okay, let's lighten it up a little bit.
Yep.
Because you're from Wisconsin, you live in Portland. What are the three most aggravating things white people do? Because I have a list.
Your list is way more than three.
It's more than three. I'm trying to make it hot.
In regards to what they say to you, or just in general?
Just in general.
I don't know if this is lighter.
Way worse, right? See, that's
they always assume that you like fried food.
Yep.
I always assume that.
Wait, I was at Jamba Juice yesterday and I ordered a watermelon breeze. And this breezy behind the counter yells out, "Watermelon breeze?" And I have to walk up and get it. I'm like, "God damn it, don't put me on blast. Just wanted to get this on the low." They never do that. You just call my name.
Yo, that's so aggravating because every time I'm in the grocery store, I'm like, shit. Ah, damn. Gelson's got the best one. They're all looking at me. I can tell they are. I know they are. This isn't in my head.
And sometimes, if they ask, if they run across maybe in their business, another person of color, and he's from your town, like, "Oh, yeah, I met this nice guy the other day. Don't you know him? He said he grew up in Milwaukee with you." I mean, he said, "I don't know every black person that grew up in the state of Wisconsin."
Are you sure you don't know Master P on a personal level?
You got to know Jay's. Come on. I mean, you all hang out in the same circles. You
hang out together, don't you?
No, Michael, I don't know the other black person you know. That's so ridiculous.
Okay, so wait, I did this segment online last week, a couple weeks ago, called HOF or FOH, and the discussion is, should this player be in the Hall of Fame? And we were talking about Draymond Green. Now, it was scripted, it was funny. I mean, I wrote some jokes to make, came off a bit insensitive to JaVale McGee.
Yeah, apologize, yeah, JaVale. A lot.
That's the homie. But in this discussion, in preparing for it, I looked up his stats. Across the board, his stats are like half your career stats. And there are people who believe that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Do you, when you see a guy like Draymond Green, are you like, "That's for sure a Hall of Famer"? Or are you, "I don't know about that"? FOH or HOF? Let's hear your take.
I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think because he's been associated with some unbelievable dynasty type or teams, he may be in the conversation. Now, again, if you look at his stats, they aren't Hall of Fame stats. But you start talking about, okay, he's got chips. He's got a Defensive Player of the Year award. Those are going to bring him to the conversation. But if you're telling me that, you know, like if you compare him to, cause he's like a three or a four man, right? So if you go back to my era, he's not Dominique. I mean, Dominique's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Larry Bird is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Alex English, those guys are first ballot Hall of Famers. Right? You know, Charles Barkley, first ballot Hall of Famer. They didn't win championships, you know, right. But numbers and what they're able to do over their career warrant them to be Hall of Fame players. And I think it's just that has changed a little bit in regards to how they look at Hall of Fame guys. Because, again, if you just look at his numbers, no, they're not Hall of Fame numbers. But if you throw those other things in the equation, I'm sure he's going to get some votes for it. I'm sure he's going to get votes. I mean, again, his career is still not over. If he they sometimes reload and he gets another chip, or get to come more first team all defensive teams and earn those type of accolades, he's going to get in. I don't know the last time someone who you could say was he was a starter for a championship team. I mean, Steve Kerr won 7 or 8. He never was a starter. Robert Horry won 7 or 8 chips as well. Never a starter on those teams. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting conversation when he comes up, what his final resume looks like.
Right, right. I think the starter thing is interesting.
I would say he's going to be in the conversation. It's hard to say one or the other right now at this point. I don't know if that's...
Well, we use guys like him because it's supposed to split the room, right? Like there's equal amounts of argument pro as there are against.
Yeah.
But I think you mentioned starters on championship teams, and I think that there is a distinction. That, I mean, the Lakers won 3 championships in the early 90s. Probably only 2 Hall of Famers on that team. But they had 5 starters. Who's the third one? Who am I forgetting?
Cap.
Kobe, Shaq.
Cap. Oh, you're talking about – okay, I'm going way back.
Yeah, I'm talking about 2000. Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, we're talking about the 80s Lakers. They got like 5 Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
The Kobe Shaq team, two Hall of Famers and 3 just guys.
Like Rick Fox.
They played big roles. I'm not these I mean, the Rick Foxes and the Robert Orries and the, you know, Derek Fishers, they were huge.
No question.
But they're none of them are basketball Hall of Famers based on their play.
Yeah. I mean, did Fish win four? How many chips did Fish win with Kobe? Four or five? He wasn't there for all five, was he? You have to look that up. But again, he was blessed to be a part of a great organization, be a huge factor. But yeah, I don't see him being an Hall of Fame type player. Fox the same way. They had good roles and meaningful roles. But yeah, their numbers aren't quite to that level.
Right. So yeah, I guess in that vein, I personally see Draymond as
he got five.
The best second player on that team. The best player.
What?
Draymond Green as the next bet, like, we know the three guys, Clay, Steph, and KD. He's like the next tier down from them. He's not in that. He's a guy that he can miss games if they saw those other three, and I see them still being able to win a championship.
Oh, no question. No question. You got Steph, Clay Thompson, and Kevin Durant. Yeah. Those other two guys could be Ray Charles, for that matter.
Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles ran out
They can fill in our lives, too. I mean, when you talk about elite dynasties, and this is the thing that Phil had during his run, Phil had arguably the best players, two or three best players of their positions on his teams. The Chicago team, they had Pip and Mike, and arguably – you know, Rodman was a utility man, but he was still one of the elite of his position. And then he went to L.A., he got Shaq and Kobe, best two in their position. So you can do some things when you got the best guys of those positions, and those guys are, warriors and determined and have some dog in them.
All hate, no facts, Draymond is not getting in because he went to Michigan State. That's the whole conversation right there. That's like, we could have ended it there. He's not getting there. Get out of here, role player.
But you coached in the league, and you have a head coach speak. There's only a couple guys I ever played with who didn't have head, like Sam Mitchell. Just he talked like he was just straight out. I was like, man, you got an old school game, man. I fucks with you, young homie. The only one who didn't have head coach speak, Sam Mitchell. But
I coached with Sam. We're the same coach and we played together.
He's funny, man. Yeah, he's funny. Yeah, you have to have a Sam Mitchell story for me then. You gotta have
Sam
something.
Is hilarious, man. Sam is hilarious. Sam is, man. You cannot set Sam up. He's constantly talking. He's a talker. Like Sam. Okay, man. Kill it. But no. Great to be around. Great brother.
I'm glad you did it because that's how Brianna and I met. But like, how miserable was it coaching for the Pistons? I as someone who was betrayed by that organization as thoroughly as I was, like, I have to imagine it was just the worst event of your life.
No, those teams were good teams. Those teams had great experience. That Chauncey and Rip and no, those teams again another championship caliber team that. The most challenging part was obviously, not getting back to the finals. Those guys was committed to winning. She was a challenge at times managing him. I think Chauncey and those guys, Tayshaun Prince, those guys did a great job of managing him a lot. Because when you're on a great team, a lot of times the players will police each other, right?
Yeah.
But that happens, and so. It was great when it came that way with she, because she could be a challenge at times just dealing with his approach to the game. You had to be – she's just one of those guys that – I mean, he's one of the most high basketball IQ guys I've ever been around. But if he didn't respect you, he was like, oh, I'm not – you're like, I don't know what I'm in on the floor with you for, man. What are you doing on the floor? And he just loses attention, right? But he was like –
yeah.
Kevin Garnett or Tim Duncan, it's on. You know, he's locked in now. He's ready. But a guy of not his level, you just, I mean, Chauncey said all the time, you might just bring that man and sit him on the bench because he used to tonight, coach. He ain't doing nothing. He ain't doing nothing but just tripping.
That's also not surprising to me because Rasheed Wallace came up one time for a Country Day game, and before we were like waiting in like the hallway before we went into the court, and he was like, "You little soft ass niggas ain't ready to play this game," and I was like, "Whoa, bro!" I was like, "Hello to you too, sir." I was like, "What the hell?" We were like 16, like holy shit, bro! Like. Hi, person we look up to. All right.
Did you win the game?
Yes, we did.
All right, you lost the game. If you had lost it, no. What about he was right?
We would have popped him by like 20. And he still was like,
you all right. Lost it. He still saw. I told y'all y'all wasn't ready for the game. I told y'all.
It's your fault if we did lose the game. Like right before we walk out? Come on, bro. People is just reckless, dog. That's hilarious, though.
Yeah, I played with a lot of like not as extreme as Rasheed. It's funny, I feel like the higher level of basketball you get to, it's like there's less guys like that, but the guys who are like that, they're so good that they're above like reprieve. So they really double down on being that way. Overseas, you meet guys like that because they never figured it out. Yeah. And then they just end up playing a half a season and getting sent home or something. But dudes in the league, like, I don't think people get how big the personalities are in the NBA. Like, crazy big. Like, even on small things, like Jamal McGlure. Every time he did anything, he would, like, say it out loud. Almost like he was, like, talking his stats into existence. And, like, small shit like that is, like, it's funny as hell to a regular person. When you're on the court, it's confusing. I'd be going up for a rebound, and I hear, "Mine!" And I'm getting bumped out of the way by my own teammate. Snagging
Board
it
man.
Down.
Board man. It didn't work for Kawhi, so maybe you shouldn't be doing it.
Carmelo does it.
I know.
Carmelo,
fuck out of here.
Carmelo's true rebounding number should be like 3 a game, but he yells out that he's got the other 3 and people get out of his way, man.
Maybe
he's
it works it. Psychologically. He get in your brain. Who is the most difficult person you've coached, Terry, or had to deal with as a teammate, either or?
As a teammate, J.R. Ryder, when I first got to Minnesota, and he was a challenge. He was a challenge. Me, Sam, and we had to have a lot of conversation with that young man about just showing up on time and just conducting himself in a manner that, you know, that's being a pro. You know, how long can I be a pro every day? Unbelievable talent, but he just, the streets, he just always wanted to be a part of it. He was gambling and just out there late night and just that he couldn't just separate the two in regards to, okay, I got to take care of this and then I got to go have some fun. But nah, it was, couldn't balance. Time management, doesn't matter what career you're in, your ability to manage your time and still be productive on the professional level was something he did not never master.
Couldn't get out of his own way.
Do you think he didn't have, like, because he's not the only example of this. Someone with the tremendous talent that doesn't live up to it for various reasons, but I feel like a lot of times the reasons are the ones you're saying. They never truly learn how to be a pro and take their game to the next level. Do you feel like that's also something that will just always be around, or do you think that's something that guys... Because I had a talk with someone who's a D-League coach, and he was saying, like, when you were in a D-League, Rod, there's a lot more head cases, quote-unquote, a lot more guys who didn't know how to be pros. But he's like, now the D-League is, like, the guys that come in there are focused and ready, and that's why when they get called up, they end up contributing right away. Do you notice that difference or not?
Yeah, I think guys like that, you have to first be really talented, like you talked about before. And the guys that are borderline now, I think they fall through the cracks more because it's just in today's game, they're not putting up with it because the investment they got to put in, you know, the money now is so big, so much bigger. And they invest 20, 40, 50 million in someone who's, you know, who's going to just turn around and not be able to manage himself, it becomes a risk. It becomes a big time risk. So I think now there are more background checks, more detail done on kids nowadays. Kids are younger, but also I think kids are educated a lot younger nowadays than they did back in our day. AAU has changed all that. AAU has changed all that. To these kids now know, you know, they're getting schooled on it from the AAU coach to the shoe companies, and they go into all these different types of, when they go to these elite camps are literally bringing in pros to talk to them. Other pros that may have played at the AAU, or pros that, you know, you hear some of these guys like Chris Paul or LeBron, they got those shoe companies. They have like a skill development, and they try to educate these kids on how to be a pro, how to conduct themselves, you know, with the importance of education. And they talk about social events. So they're a lot more schooled today than they ever were. And I think those kids that we've talked about, those kids get weeded out. They get weeded out quicker. So I think it's less of the kids that just don't get it. And they just, because they like, why waste the time and obviously the financial commitment to those kids?
Okay, on that same point, you are under the delusion that the Portland Timbers are a good soccer team.
What, man? I mean, they won two chips. They are real. They are real.
That's like 10% of all the MLS championships. You got to give them some credit.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
What are you saying?
Yeah. What's the MLS, bro?
What's
the worst basketball?
Come on, bring them on.
I hate on the MLS. I don't hear anybody in Spain hating on the ACB, bro, like the basketball league. I don't hear, you know what I mean? Like,
bring them on.
It's not the NBA.
We're taking on all challenges, and we're putting our trophy case up. I'm just saying, you know, the Clippers thought they were going to be that ship. You know, I'm just saying, you know.
Hey, there it is. There it is. There it is.
Everybody's going to stab in at the Clippers.
That's why you got to play the game. Just don't look at the paper.
The point of that shot was just, do you think that there is going to be like a transition, like, because you're starting earlier at development, especially with all these basketball players being in soccer, that soccer is going to be, as football starts to die down because of concussions, yada, 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 there's going to be a move towards more sports in that vein where you can have chances to get more money. Like, soccer's getting you more money. Basketball's getting up towards baseball money. You know what I mean? Like, do you think that's going to be more progressions? Like, there's going to be more money in that?
I mean, I think, you know, it's hard with football because football is like the American sport, right? It's just everybody grew up, and it's become, I think, more of a region sometimes. Like, you start going to the South, Texas, or some, you know, you grow up, son, you're going to be playing football. It was just a given. But I think, as you said, as more is being brought to the long-term damage of kids who've played football, I think more and more parents are taking a very, very long look at that and saying, you know what? What am I setting my son up for? What am I trying to do for him? And do I want to put him in harm's way? I mean, I think that, again, if you want to raise your son to be a quarterback, he's got a great chance of not having any issues, because quarterbacks now are protected like no one ever can protect it. Exactly. You can't. You trip and roll to a port. So that's a flag.
Sneeze
a little. That's a flag. Yeah. And so the long-term damage for quarterbacks is nowhere like it is for a running back or a receiver or the O-line or the D-line. Those guys are still, man, they got issues, long-term issues. And you see them all.
Well, since this is a audio format, Terry might be a little frozen here.
We're waiting for it to reload.
I guess I can just edit this part out, but maybe I won't. How y'all feeling? Have you checked in with yourself today?
Yeah. Hey, guys. How are you feeling? Spiritually, mentally, all that?
Oh, it looks like he's back. He kind of cut out for a minute there.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all good.
I lost you guys.
Oh.
Back? Yeah, to ask you to finish that. Yeah, I feel good, man. I feel good. We got news that basketball is going to start. So we're excited about that. We haven't got a schedule, but
All right.
You know, they're still working through how they're going to manage through Corona and what kind of testing system we're going to have in place. And it's good. It's good. It's
that
is that something that you know you're closer to the age demo that they say should be worried, but you'd be around a bunch of 20-year-olds who every single one I know doesn't care at all about this,
yeah,
and is just interested in partying. Mm-hmm. Is that something you have concerns about, is like your own health, or are you just gung-ho and like whatever happens?
Yeah. And that was my big concern with football particularly. It's like, how are you going to keep these kids from not, what like,
they
not
really tried to,
you know,
manage.
They're going to be going to school, and what is a college kid going to
really put
do,
forth,
you know,
is a structure in place.
That's just brick health.
That the kids get tested every day or every other day to a level where no one falls through the cracks. You know, I think that, you know, we don't have any kids on campus. So from that standpoint, there's not really a lot of interaction with other kids. It's kind of like a bubble in itself. I mean, right now all we have is obviously the upperclassmen who live on off campus, but they're just, you know, they're just doing classes online and doing what they're doing. Yeah. It's not like there's a lot of interacting, walking around on campus. I mean, we're only allowed so many kids in our athletic department. Each kid's got to go through the questionnaire every day, get tested. The amount of temperature has to be taken every day. So I feel good about what our medical staff has come up with in regards to trying to make sure we don't have that scenario, you know, come out and play. But, you know, again, the numbers, you would think with the numbers it's going to happen, and then you just have to deal with it. I mean, that's the reality that we just have to deal with it. But I think because of the testing is accelerated to the point where you're getting the results back at a much quicker time. I mean, when we first did it, we first brought our kids on, it was like 8 to 10 days before you got the results. Now it's 2 to 3 days. So even they're working on, I think it's just a couple hours. Yeah, each couple hours you can get it back. So, you know, I think that type of testing will definitely be able to, you know, get out in front of it, or have a chance to really get out in front of it. And so I'm very optimistic about that happening. Yeah, we haven't. No, our state guidelines still are pretty tough.
You know, it's ridiculous because it was like
it's challenging because when you look at our conference have,
like, have you all been able to
majority of our schools are in the state of California. Whether it's LMU and Pepperdine, I don't think they're even allowed to have practice indoors. They're still doing stuff outdoors, and so it's a challenge based on your own individual state guidelines and where your numbers are in that state and what your guidelines are, because we're at least allowed to be in the building. Obviously, you know, we have to mask up and be gloved and make sure we don't have, you know, a lot of guys on the same court. But again, some guys, some teams, universities in our league's not even able to get indoors. So it's going to be interesting to see how that accelerates going forward as we get closer and closer to the starting deadline.
Yeah. Follow-up question. How much do you hate St. Mary's? Because for me, it's a lot. For me, it's through the roof. Can't stand them. Never have been able to.
I don't think we beat them
yet.
They
took our spot in this tournament when I was
a
junior. Never forgave them on these Australian kids.
But my son did play for them.
I don't like them. How do you feel about it?
I did have a son play for them.
Oh, I didn't realize I didn't like your son. Wow, that's crazy. But here we are.
I played this live just for Franklin. But like, guess what? How could you?
They were just, they were the only school that had like open, if we didn't have open gym, it would be at their place. And they were just so, I mean, it makes sense why they ended up being good, but just so cocky and so, like, so white and just so, like, annoying. I'm like, God damn it. Like, you're not better than me. You're not. Stop with the nonsense.
So cocky and so white.
That you was, know what I mean.
That's what Franklin said. They were very white. So that is accurate. But how does this is my question with football. If you aren't allowing people to do any practice, like once the game time starts, isn't it inherently just going to be a worse quality as people start to get in the rhythm again on the court, like while it's happening?
And again, football, like obviously there's more things involved with football, but I think like, what do you expect us to do with this?
You know what I mean?
Like, any sport, when you're the coach,
dumbfounded by the it's October about football day.
The opportunity to prepare your team to be in the best condition. They can be in to be and have the most understanding of the schemes that you're trying to get done. And it takes time to do that. And when you're not allowed, just for example, when you're not allowed to do any type of contact stuff, it takes away your ability to really execute anything when it comes time to, you know, play a game. I mean, there's a rhythm to it. I mean, football, I mean, you imagine not playing not being able to play football, not to be able to hit. I mean, guys would probably like that, but then come Saturday or come Sunday, and you, all of a sudden you got to hit.
Yeah.
There's a shock factor there. So I think that, like anything, you have to have a proper amount of time to prepare your team and to try to get them ready for it. And when you don't have that adequate enough time to really get it done, it becomes a bad product or guys not being in shape or being in the type of conditions they need to be and then not being able to play ball at a level that that's expected of them.
One thing that you can do right now that has no restrictions in California is golf. Goodness.
Jesus Christ.
And he's been getting annoyed.
You got to join the movement. You got to join the movement, baby. Golf is hot right now. It's trending.
I had a tee time this morning for 9 a.m. He called me yesterday. I was like, any other time? I'm ready. I'm locked in for this morning. Gotcha. It's hot. You know he's stubborn. He's stubborn. Just
I'm the wave.
He's like, oh, I think archery is the same.
I'm fighting the wave, man.
He thinks archery is the same as golf.
In the river,
The question I have is,
I've never played with him.
And is it better than Michael Jordan? Have you golfed with him and beaten him and taken his money?
I think his handicap's a little bit lower than mine. I'll be up for the challenge. I'll be up for the challenge.
I like that smoke. That was a political. Yeah, I'll take his money. That's a political. I'll take his pockets. The problem with Mike is that he'll just keep. He's like, all right, Terry, that's another 18.
He's
like,
gonna
run it back. He'll play 72 holes before he gives up the money.
Right? Like, no.
And I took that personally.
Best of three, best of five. Fuck out of here. How did you feel about the Michael Jordan documentary? Because Rod hates Michael Jordan after that Michael Jordan documentary.
I don't hate him. I just don't. I think that there are. My thing, and I would appreciate your take on this.
When did it get outdated?
The idea that you have to be an asshole to be good is outdated, and so the more that he kept doubling down on that, for me it was like, I would say that first of all, I don't think it's ever been a thing, but I think that he and other athletes in like the past kind of popularized this idea. And I'm not saying that it's ever needed to be a thing, but it's something that a lot of fans still expect. They're like, hey, you can't win unless your top guy is the biggest dick in the room. And for me, watching it, I kind of had two takeaways. One is that I think that leadership has a lot of different forms. I don't think you have to lead that way. But also, I feel like Jerry Krause was a GM in that same vein, and Michael Jordan hated it. So it's like you like it when you're the guy doing it, but not when it's being done to you. And for that reason, I was like, I don't like him as much as I used to just seeing the details of that stuff. It's a hot take.
That's what I said. I'm going for football. I was like, I don't understand that, bro. You have to be an asshole to do the thing.
When you're involved with the corporation or you're
looked upon. To a degree, yeah. I don't disagree with that. To that degree. Leader, no, right? I don't think so.
And you have to face so many, let's just say, bad, not bullets, but you got to get a lot of hits. They're coming at you, right? Media's coming at MJ. Win or lose, it's always him. And so there's an expectation for him, when he walks out that door, right, that there's a certain level of play yep. and certain things. Well, if he's going to be taking all the bullets for the guys behind him, then he better expect that the guys behind him are doing everything they can, right, to maximize their opportunity to be the best they can be. This goes back to, you know, J.R. Smith or guys who are very talented. If you're part of a team, a part of a championship caliber team, everybody's got to pull their weight. And you have to understand what your leaders are going to be and how they're going to conduct and what they expect of you. And you have to be willing to take that heat. I've never been around a championship team that the top guys didn't give heat to the other guys. Now, I don't know how you define heat. I don't know if you asshole. I don't know how you say asshole because, I mean, I think we've all faced assholes, and I don't think a teammate of mine is ever, I would ever define him as an asshole. I think that.
Well, that's the question.
There's definitely a certain level of respect factor that I think first happens when you're on a team, and I don't know if this happens in corporate America. Sometimes a boss can just be a boss because he can fire you. On a team. Superstar, for the most part, can't fire you. There's first a respect factor because you've gone through the challenges of getting to a certain level, a pinnacle in your career, and you've achieved that together. Yes, Michael have done the majority of it, but Steve Kerr's in the world, Cartwright's of the world, there was huge factor in regards to helping them achieve those type of that type of success. So I loved it. I thought everything about it was great. Even someone who was in that era, I found a lot of things. I mean, the Dennis Rodman getting 72 hours to go hang out in Vegas for a vacation in the middle of season blew me away. I'm like, what? And then MJ had to go get him, and Carmelo Lecter is the one who greets you at the door saying that. Nobody I've ever been around done that. I mean, what he's done is just, he flipped the switch on everything. I mean, the man wore a dress and said he was going to get married. I mean, he just went to a whole new different level in regards to, you know, how a professional athlete mantras or their brand. I mean, he just took it to another level. This is where I get down, and you either with it or you're not. I ain't got no problem with that. You ain't got to be with it, but just leave me the fuck alone.
Part here, so we're gonna sound weird for a second, but in the last 30 years, there have been basically five. Champions. I mean, six if you include the Rockets, but I'll say basically five champions. And I would say two of them are famous for having leaders who are, let's just say, more aggressive, and the other three are not. And I think that the Kobe Michael teams are kind of what the casual fan thinks as the pinnacle for how a team should be led. And I think that the Tim Duncan, Steph Curry, LeBron teams are, I'm sure they're equally as, they hold their teammates just as accountable, et cetera. They do it in a different way. And that side never gets the same credit. So even if, hey, maybe there's different styles that it takes to win, I can totally understand that. Those other three are never talked about in terms of what people look for in leadership. It's only the first two. In my experience, listening to this conversation over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Larry, my MJ was like that. Magic was like that. Larry was like that. And, you know, I played with Timmy, and Timmy was not like that. David Robinson was not like that. But to be a leader, it's about being able to get your guys to follow, right? It's all about follow. And I think, you know, when you talk about Kobe and Michael, everybody said they're the same, you know, DNA. Kobe's respected a lot of things that Michael and how he went about being a pro. And so from that standpoint, I can see where he really tried to implement a lot of things that MJ did. But I think, it's about your own personal, you know, how you manage it, and then how you get people around you to buy into your leadership and how you conduct it. Like you said, I think Tim was a great leader. I mean, he didn't, but when he did talk, everybody knew, shit, we better be locked in. Because he didn't say a lot. But again, he was always the first one to the gym, last one to leave, always worried about guys, always checking in, making sure guys were okay. He did it a different way.
Yeah. Again, like, no, Tim Duncan won 5 championships, and no one talks about his leadership style. Like, no, that's all I'm saying. It's not. I guess I'm not necessarily saying one is better. I did.
That's all I'm saying.
When I watched the documentary,
it
to me was like reaffirming that people only ever talk about that one way. And I don't think that's
one way.
I don't think that's just applicable in real life.
Were you and Clyde telling people they can't eat?
I don't think that's just applicable. How many meals did you deny?
Telling people they can't eat?
Your rookies.
That's what they play for.
Rookies.
Rookies. Rookies.
Rookies. We didn't go that. That's crazy.
I think that's what he's trying to say. Dude was wild.
You were in the league for a long, long time. Which to me signifies like a pro's pro. You obviously were a guy that teams won in the locker room for years and years and years. At the end, especially, did you have like a routine with rookies that you would? Hey, rookie, like I've been here 15 years. You don't know shit. You're going to bring me 8 donuts at 8 p.m. every day for 8 weeks until you get it, until you figure it out.
No, I mean, there were certain things that...
get it burned in your head.
As a veteran, old guy, pops, or however you want to try to label the guy with all the experience, there was like a mentorship when I was around. Guys did it to me when I stepped on the scene. But there's also just, it's not hazing, but it's just, you know, part of the process, right? You know, you, as a rookie, you had to be to practice earlier because, you know, you had to make sure you got there and got on the taping table before the vets came, because if the vets came, they were going to bump you. And then that means you would be late for practice. So you had to get there early. Again, when we were flying commercial flights, the rookies, the vets would get off the plane, walk on the bus, and the rookies had to identify their luggage to the porter, but he can grab their bags. And then you had to come up on the bus and tell vet 25, vet 24, whatever, vet, your bags are good. I gave it to the porter. So, but that was all part of just, I mean, it's fun. It's part of the, you know, it was nothing crazy. They always watched out for you. I mean, I remember guys, you know, when I first jumped on the scene, they took me, I got my first suit. I remember when I was a vet, a couple guys, I would always give them their first suit. Times when we were going home and they were going to hometown, I would, you know, get an envelope with your per diem. I would give them my envelope, go, man, go have a good time back at home, which was just per diem money, and just, you know, hit them up like that and just show them love.
Yeah, per diem money, on that note, just you just reminded me of a funny story. I don't think per diem Chris knows all my stories at this point, but maybe not this one. I was in camp with the Nets, and my net worth must have been like $17 total. And the per diem is like $100 a day, something like that. And I had the locker right next to like Jason Collins. And he got his per diem and he put it in, he took it out of the envelope and put it in there. And I realized he must have had like, I don't even want to put him on blast, a lot of money. Like a crazy, like more than most people's annual salary amount of money in there. And I was like, that's your per diem? He's like, 7 years, man, never spent it. Just kept putting it in his goddamn locker. I was like, this is insane. Just seeing that much cash when you have nothing. I was like, bro, just anything, please. Sir, I'll dance. I'll do whatever you need.
Let me get 2 weeks.
Let me just
give 2 weeks. Said, help me out. That's hilarious. MJ said you were the hardest person that's defended him. Who, after MJ, was the most difficult person for you to check?
Guard-wise, my position, Tim Hardaway, Kevin Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, smaller, quicker guards was always a challenge for me. Thank God we could put our hands on them back then compared to today, because you know they could put it, they can put the ball on the floor and you're able to disrupt their route a little bit by putting your hands on their hip. But those guys, those three guys, I put them in the same group because they all had the same skill set. They were very good with the ball, good handles, could shoot it, could score in a lot of different ways, and just their offenses that they're on really predicated around their ability to get shots. And so those guys was a challenge, really a challenge.
Rod hates when I talk about this. Do you think that Bill Laimbeer was a
bitch? Rod hates when I talk about this. Do you think that
Bill Laimbeer was a bitch? What do you mean I hate? We talked about this one time for like 2 minutes.
Bill Laimbeer because we talked about this like three times and he's like, oh, fuck out of here. Everybody, whenever I bring up Bill Laimbeer, goes, shut the fuck up. And I'm like, I think it's rather funny that a dude got a whole
Let me clarify, because I don't think we've actually talked about this at length. I don't mind Bill Laimbeer. He was necessary for the moment. Like, when you have a guy like that on your team, you love him. When he's on the other team, you hate him. It's just the bottom line. I don't think I have had a strong opinion about him.
I think Bill Laimbeer, for that team, he was a very important part of that team. And he was, you know, again, I wouldn't say he was the most talented guy, but he figured out a way to get underneath your skin and mentally screw you up, right? Mentally beat you, you know, give you a bow here, give you a push here, do you something. He would try to figure out, you know, what was your point where he could try to get you to cross the point where you all of a sudden you lost track of what you were doing in the game. You couldn't focus on your skill set because, I mean, he could not outrun anybody. He couldn't outjump anybody. He could mean, so how was he going to beat you? I mean, he was going to beat you by mentally, you know, getting you off your game. He, you know, he played with the edge. He played with the toughness. You give him that. And, you know, his ability to make shots, and he had a good basketball IQ, but for that team, it was a perfect fit. I don't know if that would have fit with another team. I don't know if he would. Yeah, he couldn't have been part of the Lakers Showtime because he was. Well, you can. What was he going to do? He can't go running down the lane. Magic going to give him a no look pass. He's going to fly there and dunk. You know, so everybody just, it's important, like in life, you just got to find your niche and find the right place you can go. Fit that script and get paid for it.
Yeah, I think there's a few like modern day Laimbeers. I would say, I mean, depending on what like the rules are. If the rules were different, these guys would definitely be Bill Laimbeers. But I'd say Aaron Baines is a Bill Laimbeer for sure. Just a strong dude who fouls a lot. Is there to be an enforcer and can shoot threes a little bit.
Is there to be an enforcer?
And he played for Bennett.
Yeah.
Tucker.
His buddy on Houston.
Tucker's like, I mean, see, you can't compare Tucker. Tucker to me is, you know, he's in today's game, he's a makeshift. I mean, he's 6'6", 6'7". He would have been a small forward. They turned him into a center.
He's like 6'4", 6'5". He's listed 6'5", so you know he's 6'3" and a quarter.
If he's listed as 6'5", that means he's 6'4".
The game has become positionless basketball. You just put your best players out there. I mean, Houston Rockets, like you said, the tallest guy they have on their roster is 6'7".
You'd be
a pick and pop four.
Jump forward.
I could be a pick and pop four.
Because you're 6'3", yeah.
jump forward.
And visually, you look 6'9", so it works. You get the intimidation of the height.
You look 6'9",
and the skill of the small.
So
it plays
the small. Intimidation of the height. And the skill of the small.
You get all the wins.
I would say Emeka Okafor and Ethan Strauss, the guy who wrote the book on the Warriors.
And
I have more listening to do than talking, so it's not. I'm not going to get off the rails. I like to hear this shit. But it is. We are approaching the time. We didn't talk about the movie at all, which I told Chris. I was like, I have so many questions for this guy. I'm not going to really ask about the movie. So we could do that maybe another time. But I do want to know if there's anything coming up for you, any messages you'd like to give, etc. Just to square it all together.
No, I would say square it all together. With today's environment, I would say everybody register to vote. Get out and vote. Whoever you want to vote for, get out and vote. That's the big thing. That's, you know, get out and, you know, have some issues you're very strong about. Try to find a candidate you feel fit to that and get out and vote. Otherwise, you know, it's about trying to make change in any way you can. Any way you can, trying to make change to get us going back on a positive vibe. Our country going on a positive vibe right now is very negative.
Yeah, I'll add a tag onto this about resources where you can vote. In case any of my listeners currently aren't registered to vote, we'll give you that information. And I will add to that, if you vote for Donald Trump, I'll kill you. I'll come and I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
I'm not saying that strong. I'm not coming out that strong. I don't need no heat like that.
I was vote for whoever you want, favor your opinion, you die.
But I'm not talking about copping nobody.
There it is.
Wild. There he goes. He brought it back.
All right, sir, we appreciate you giving us your time this morning. I know you got a busy morning.
Thanks a lot. Right, appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.